You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
Good morning, everyone. Thinking about Haiti, this scene that I'm about to play you here, you heard a bit of it at the top of the hour, recorded by a BBC reporter at a hospital in Port-au-Prince, sort of says it all about what's going on in Haiti today.
I need help, man. I need help. She's fighting, but I need help.
Are you getting any help?
No, there's no help. There's no help in here. The kids is dying. She want to fight. She's fighting, but there's no help, you know. She need to go to the operation room. You know what I'm saying? There's nobody in here, man. We know there's no help.
That man speaking to the BBC, pleading for a doctor, pleading for someone to give his daughter an operation. Perhaps it's a 21st century question, but when we see Dr. Sanjay Gupta in a T-shirt and Anderson Cooper there, why aren't they saving people's lives? If you can get cameras in there, why can't you get humanitarian supplies in there? Of course, people at CNN are hardworking, and for all we know, Sanjay Gupta, when he's off camera, may be saving lives. But it certainly poses the question pointedly in this day and age, why can't humanitarian supplies flow as freely as information and pictures? Adrian Carrigan, Senior Vice President of the Catholic Medical Mission Board, joins us from New York. He sort of talked a little bit about the challenges. We go now to Port-au-Prince, where Chloe Gons-Rugbrecht, the health delegate to the Haiti delegation of the American Red Cross, joins us on a Skype connection that's a little iffy, like all of the communications in Haiti this morning. Chloe, first of all, if you can get cameras into Port-au-Prince, why not doctors with scalpels and medical equipment?
Well, good morning, John and Celeste. First, I do want to say that there are many doctors and nurses that are trying to do what they can with very limited supplies. But right now, there's no inn into Port-au-Prince. The runway, as of last night when I went to sleep, was shut. Medical supplies are coming through the Dominican Republic. It's just simply not enough to respond to the 2 to 3 million people who need help right now.
Well, that math is stark and grim. And how do you set priorities then, working with what you have, knowing that the supplies are piling up at the airport and the casualties are piling up in the neighborhoods of Port-au-Prince?
It's very, very difficult. We have a huge team of volunteers that's working on the ground, volunteers that have come from all over the country, as well as from the Dominican Republic. We have teams that are coming in from all over the country. Some came in yesterday, some are coming in today to do search and rescue. Other teams that are just providing basic first response and first aid. But basically, the infrastructure, what little infrastructure was there, was totally devastated. So even the hospitals are just inundated. Many doctors and nurses are missing under the rubble as well. So we've just lost everything.
And
the epicenter of the country.
As we pointed out earlier this week, the United Nations took the biggest single hit, their largest loss of life in the history of peacekeeping for the United Nations. And that, of course, is an infrastructure that would be expected to rise to the occasion here, and they're struggling. Adrian Carrigan, talk a little bit about setting priorities. And you heard the frustration in Chloe Gans-Rugbrecht's voice there. How do you set priorities when you are so limited, both in what you can get in and the people that you can reach?
Well, a perfect example of that is our country director, Dr. Diane Jean-Francois. We have an instant messenger connection open with her. And the first priority was to help the staff and their families get out of the rubble. And then secondly, getting to the hospitals which have been destroyed and setting up triage and perimeters around the hospital, and then to take care of the dead. And that is a major effort right now, which is requiring all the logistical equipment for clearing the roads to get those folks, and then to take care of the sick and wounded. We're getting some supplies in. We're fortunate that we have a lot of supplies there, and we have a major shipment arriving tomorrow, and we've contracted some helicopters to get them out to the perimeter so that we can treat some of the really folks who really need it most.
You know, the frustration, I think, for a lot of Americans is reflected for moments this week in our own editorial process here. There's a producer on our staff who keeps instant messaging me, like right now, why not an airdrop, Adrian Carrigan? Can you just drop supplies into a place like Port-au-Prince and bypass the airport altogether, or does that create more problems?
You have to realize that we're talking about an area that is so concentrated with folks and a mountainous region that there's really no opportunity to do something like that. You have to have a central staging area. We are going to try some form of that logistic, but it's going to have to be really targeted, and you need to be able to get the amount of supplies we're getting in. We have a 747 going in on Saturday morning, and then trying to get those supplies out to the place needed most. You can't really do a big airdrop.
Chloe Gons-Rugebrecht, how do you tell your triage workers what to do when they're so limited and they really have to make decisions very, very quickly? What's your advice to them?
Well, they are just treating people who can be treated for now, trying to stop blood flow, fixing basic wounds with antiseptic, and basically putting them aside to be sent to hospitals and health clinics. But there are not many hospitals and health clinics that are accepting people, so we're just taking them to certain other places where other doctors are close to taking care of them.
I mean, Chloe, I have to say, that sounds like the hardest job in the universe right now. I mean, would you agree?
Yeah, it's daunting.
I mean, I can't even imagine doing such a thing.
It is. It's really daunting. And I have a friend who is not working for the Red Cross, but works for another humanitarian organization, who had 5 people die in her arms yesterday, bleeding out. It's impossible.
All right. To Chloe Gons-Rugebrecht is the health delegate to the Haiti delegation of the American Red Cross. You can hear her there via Skype connection in Port-au-Prince. Thanks to Adrian Carrigan, Senior Vice President of the Catholic Medical Mission Board, joining us from Long Island. Thank you, Adrian. We want to put your voices into this program as well. We've been hearing a lot from you. We posed the question yesterday, whose responsibility is it to deal with the humanitarian crisis in Haiti? Here was one of your responses.
This is Diana from Long Beach. The U.S. does not have to do anything. We would like to do things, and we can do things privately, and we can do things through the government, but we do not have to do anything. We have put millions of dollars into Haiti over the last several decades, just trying to build infrastructure and keep people alive, and that's my takeaway.
You can reach us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org. Diana wasn't alone in that sense that we don't have to do anything, but there were some people who said we ought to rise to the occasion.
Hi, this is Larry from Brooklyn. As far as whose responsibility it is to rescue the people of Haiti, I think nobody ever said it better than John Donne, who said, "No man is an island," and finished his sonnet with, "Never send to know for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee."
The bell tolls for all of us here on The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.